And we're back. Hi, everybody. You know, we're working our way toward becoming the most trusted, the most watched news and information shows internationally. And we're this close because we're committed to context and to truth-telling. In this edition, we're going to catch you up on the week's big stories. For example, the curious connection between ISIS-K and the CIA. Have you heard about that? And who's really state TV? You hear that all the time. Oh, that's just propaganda. That's state TV. Is it us or is it them? I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact. Okay, we have got a lot to talk about, and we are going to be talking to the right person. Joining me right now is political scientist and co-host for the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik, Dr. Wilmer Leon. Thanks for being with us, friend.
Thanks for the invitation.
I'm glad to have you here.
Good
All right, let's get started with a little fun here. National Security Spokesperson John Kirby. I don't know, did you get a chance to see this? He is twisting his words and trying to find a way. He just looks so incredibly uncomfortable. Look how, I want you to watch this with me. Watch how he agonizes in trying to find the right words so he does not, repeat, does not offer condolences or any kind of support to the people of Russia or the Russian government. Instead, he tries to make it individualized after the Moscow attack. Here, let's watch it.
And our thoughts, obviously, are going to be with the victims of this terrible, terrible shooting attack. And I think, you know, you look at that video, if you have, and you got to recognize that there's some moms and dads and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters that haven't gotten the news yet. And this is going to be a tough day. So our thoughts are with them.
What the hell is he talking about?
Unfortunately, he doesn't even know what he's talking about.
Didn't it seem weird to you? It seemed, when I heard it, I was like, why doesn't he just come out and say, today the United States of America offers its condolences to the people of Russia. We are here to offer our support in any way. We may have our differences, but we can work together. I don't know anything.
Because the United States has this incredibly asserted effort to demonize Russia's president and thereby demonize the country. And I found it interesting, he didn't refer to it as a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
He referred to it as a shooting attack.
Shooting, yeah, like it was just, something that happened at a convenience store.
And one reason I think is what you want to get into a little later is the fact that the United States may have been complicit.
I want to stop you before we get there because I want to bring something to your attention. I don't know if you remember, but I did a little Googling this week and I went back to 9/11 and I say, okay, so I don't remember, what did Russia do after 9/11? I found video of Vladimir Putin arriving in the United States, going and shaking hands and meeting crowds.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him going into a crowd, coming off of a plane with people, waving Russian flags and American flags together. I saw him go with Rudy Giuliani to 9/11 place where it happened, and he put up flowers in the name of the people of Russia. Then I watched him go to Texas and hang out with George Bush and offer his condolences. I watched him do all that, and then I thought in my mind, so we had a terrorist attack, and that's how they treated us. They have a terrorist attack, and we say, Ukraine didn't do it. Ukraine didn't do it.
Because you, during the 9/11 video that you watched, you saw diplomacy and statesmanship.
What happened to that?
It's called neoconservative politics and imperialism. And the United States is doing everything it can do to hold on to its imperialist edge.
But you can be imperialist and still be civil, damn it.
Not anymore.
Oh,
and that's
God.
That's one of the unfortunate elements of our politics.
Yeah.
Is you cannot be civil anymore.
These are just sensitivities, sensibilities. I mean, these are the things we learned from our mom and dad. They have nothing to do with geopolitics. They have to do with just being decent.
Just being human.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the second one. So here's something we learned this week, now alluding to what you were trying to mention a little while ago, but I had you hold me back like I'm in The Godfather. They had to pull me back. Only if you watch this show, you probably saw this week. maybe a few other places, I don't know. Did you know that the guy who founded ISIS-K was trained by contractors in Bagram Air Force Base who worked for the CIA? Did you know that he was the head security guy for the Afghan vice president who was basically a puppet for Washington? The guy's name is Shahab, there he is, see him right there? Shahab Mahahir. It's not his only name. And he's been killed since, by the way, you should know. This is what we learned about him while we were doing a segment here this week.
The leader of quote-unquote ISIS-K was a contractor at Bagram, the U.S. Air Force base in Afghanistan.
Uh-oh.
Then worked security for drug lord Rachel Dostum, a top CIA proxy, and the vice president of Afghanistan at one time. He later worked for Amrullah Saleh, chief of the Afghan intelligence unit, literally the CIA's right-hand man in Afghanistan. And he points out that it's right there on the Wikipedia page.
Hmm.
So what he's suggesting clearly is that ISIS-K is and has always been a CIA cookie cutter.
My goodness. By the way, I looked it up. You know, I'm the kind of guy probably like you. Somebody says it's in Wikipedia. I said, really? So yeah. I went right to Wikipedia. Well, there it is, his biggest life.
Dan Kovalik and Mark Sloboda.
Yeah.
It's hard to get better analysts than those two.
But think about this, what he just said, right? The organization that apparently the United States immediately came out and said they did it, they claim responsibility, is an organization that was founded, created, tied to the CIA. My God, what are the implications of that?
Well, the implications are that, A, the arch enemy of the United States, ISIS, as we've been told, they're the personification of evil, if not started by the United States, has been, I think really what Mark gets to,
especially in the ISIS-K in particular,
which has been co-opted. Scott Ritter will tell you that they've been co-opted by this, infiltrated by the CIA, co-opted by the CIA, and now to a great degree is managed.
Well, I don't,
by the CIA.
I don't want to be irresponsible. I'm a journalist. I'm not supposed to conjecture. I'm just supposed to state the facts. But the facts are, if the United States is tied to ISIS-K,
mm-hmm.
as it seems to be, then we have to ask the question, is there any link between the United States and this attack that ISIS-K just did in Russia? I'm not saying there is a tie. I'm saying it's fair to ask, and why aren't American newspapers and American media asking those questions?
That's the important question, and there are other elements of this that indicate that these were not jihadists. For example, they survived. That's the first thing to look at, is the four shooters, they survived. They didn't go down in the blaze of glory, which most ISIS operatives are trained to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions.
Exactly.
And that's all we're doing.
Exactly.
there's a lot of questions. And why the hell isn't anybody else asking them, by the way? Take a look at this video real quick. Just put up this video of this. This is the ship that apparently had an issue and crashed into the bridge in Baltimore. This is the Francis Scott Key Bridge. If you look careful at it, you could tell that the ship was out of control. The motor apparently had gone out. The lights go out. But the effect of this has been dire. It's having a very serious effect on the supply chain globally. And when we come back, you and I are going to talk about not just this,
mm-hmm.
but how many other bridges are suspect or in poor condition in the United States and what it means to our infrastructure. Stay right there because we're coming back. We've got a couple more issues that we've got to hit, which we think you'll get fresh information on that you wouldn't get anywhere else. I'm Rick Sanchez. Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez here along with Dr. Wilmer Leon. Wilmer Leon. Well, I don't know why I keep Hispanicizing your name. It is having a serious effect on the global supply chain, and it's making all of us think of the other 44,000 bridges in the United States that are now considered to be in very poor condition. Write that down and be careful what bridge you drive on. What am I talking about? This. Look at it. The Francis Scott Key Bridge. It collapsed like so. My God. You know, I've probably seen this thing about a million times, and I can't stop looking at it every time I see it. It's amazing to think a tanker apparently lost control of its capabilities, its engine, and ran into the bridge, knocked the bridge down. People died. But the real impact of this is twofold. One, it's having a very serious effect, as you probably know, on the supply chain worldwide. I didn't know just how big the Baltimore port is. It's big.
It's huge.
One of the top five in the United States.
Yes.
One of the biggest in the world.
Yes.
So that means there's stuff that's stuck there that ain't getting out and stuff that ain't getting in.
Correct. We just got over the supply chain issue. We're just now recovering from the supply chain issue with China. And now we find ourselves hit by this once again. And
by the way, they're saying, not to interrupt you, but I understand this was not one of the bridges on the list, but still you can't help but think, infrastructure-wise, that they should have had a system in place that would prevent something like this from happening, not just letting some ship nilly-willy without any escort go under a bridge.
Well, now what they should have done was kind of retrofit the bridge with barriers around the support stanchions so you can't hit it.
Right.
It's almost like a small island that they put around the support stanchions so that the ship would have hit the island, which would have absorbed the shock. And not because when you looked, I can remember looking at the bridge a number of times and thinking,
why didn't they do that?
Well,
why didn't they have, usually you go out with a ships that, small boats that guide you out, and they're actually tethered to your ship just in case, so they can move you if you can't move fast enough.
One of the things that I was trying to determine was, how far is the Francis Scott Key Bridge from the port, and what's the requirement for tugboats or maybe...
For tugboats, that's what they use.
To escort... And I was unable to come up with that information. And that's a question that I've heard a couple of reporters ask some of those that are involved in this investigation, and they haven't given that answer.
Well, here's the point. I mean, while we're losing right now about $80 billion a year in the U.S. because of poor infrastructure, bad decisions, beat-up roads, old airports, bad bridges, deteriorating dams, faulty wiring, bad internet cable connections in much of the country, by the way, because it was put in so long ago and hasn't been fixed. We are spending that money that we could use to fix that stuff elsewhere. So we looked it up, and here's what we found. And by the way, these numbers are just the tip of the iceberg, because this is how it's actuated in the year 2022, which is the most recent we could find. Every year, we got to give at least $74 billion to Ukraine, given present circumstances. Israel gets $3.3 billion. Actually, it's much more now because of what's going on in Gaza, but let's just go with the old numbers. Ethiopia gets $2.2 billion. Did you know? I didn't know Ethiopia got $2 billion a year from us. I mean, from me and you, our taxes. Afghanistan gets another $2 billion. Yemen, Egypt, Jordan, they're all on the list. These are billions and billions of dollars that could be used to fix those 44,000 bridges that are in poor condition. But instead, we're giving it all to other countries, and why? Most of it being military, by the way, not humanitarian.
Exactly. And that's the key point. One of the key points right there is, when you look at the countries that are receiving this money, who are the beneficiaries of the money? It's not the Afghan people. It's not Ethiopians. Mm-hmm. It's not the average Egyptian.
Well, one of them I just read, Yemen. Yemen is the country that's essentially attacking us right now. We're practically at war with Yemen, but we're giving them $2 billion a year.
And ask President Biden, is the conflict that the United States is engaged in Yemen, is it getting us anywhere? And he'll tell you no.
Yeah.
And in fact...
In fact, our friend John Kirby recently said that.
And in fact, the Saudis were getting ready to reach a peace deal with Ansar Allah in Yemen, and the United States told them not to do that.
Is it because I think, you know, you almost hate to say this, right, as an American, but it looks to me like my country will apt toward being in a war situation with a country than not be in a war with a country. And the only reason I can think of that they would choose war over peace is because you don't make any money on peace.
You don't make any money on peace. Another example that would prove your point would be Haiti. What's going on in Haiti right now? Why is the United States trying to reinvade Haiti?
Politics as well.
There's some geopolitical issues with Haiti, but the point still remains, why are we starting a war? Why are we starting a military conflict with Haiti? Why are we backing genocide in Gaza? Why are we sending missiles into Yemen? Why did we start this foolishness with Ukraine?
Because we need to crash helicopters to make more helicopters?
We need to deplete the military stocks of our allies so that we can restock the military's supplies for our allies.
That's crazy. Here's another big story that happened this week. I know you watched it because you're a part of the media. Any one of us who are in the media watched this and said, say what? This week, the U.S. media had a collective freakout. It's like their hair was on fire all of a sudden. I woke up one day and I said, what the hell are they so mad about? But boy, they were mad. It was all over the hiring and the firing of a woman named Rona McDaniel because she worked for the Trump presidency or the Trump administration. She also was with the Republican Party. And they seemed to not like the fact that she was being hired by their network, NBC, because she worked in the Trump government. So NBC journalist after NBC journalist went on the air and complained and they wrote op-eds. But why weren't they equally upset when other government types were hired by their own network? Look at this list that we have compiled. If you're complaining about not wanting people who, that's Jen Psaki. She was a spokesperson for both Biden and Obama. That's George Stephanopoulos. He was a spokesperson for Bill Clinton. He's now the anchorman journalist on ABC. There's Simone Sanders. She was the chief spokesperson and handled communications for the vice president of the United States, Kamala Harris. Who else we got? We got another one? Yeah, Nicole Wallace. This is the woman who sold the Iraq War. The lies that were the Iraq War were sold to the American people by Nicole Wallace while she was working as the press, the communications director for the George Bush administration. Now she's a journalist with her own show. Sarah Huckabee worked for the Trump administration, then went to work at Fox, and now she's working as a governor in the state of Arkansas. She goes from government to media, back to government. Her dad, Mike Huckabee, same thing, governor of Arkansas, has his own show on Fox News. Have we got one more? Let's see. Oh, Donna Brazile. I mean, my goodness, Donna Brazile, who essentially works as the director of the DNC, did some really controversial stuff there, giving people questions, and now she works for a journalism enterprise. I mean, we have to ask ourselves, as we look at Sean Spicer as well, who now is an anchorman at some cable news channel, even though he was working for the government. I hear all the time, we're state TV.
Right.
Anybody who works for any foreign country like China or Russia or whatever, name your country, anybody who we don't like that week. Well, their journalists are all really propagandists and state TV. What the hell can be more propaganda than working for the government, being the spokesperson for the United States of America, and then the next day after you leave that job, you end up being an anchor, a news presenter on a television station? What's more state TV than that?
It's propaganda, it's misinformation, it's disinformation, and you didn't even get to the list.
No, I could have gone on forever.
You didn't even get to the list of so-called experts and contributors, former directors of the CIA, former directors of the NSA.
Yes, the contributors.
Who come on, former generals, Marks in the
group. So let me finish that picture that you're painting. So you have somebody like Wallace, who used to work for the Bush administration, or somebody like the gal who they hired now at NBC, who used to work for the Biden administration. So she goes from doing that to being an anchor woman or a news presenter or a journalist while she's interviewing CIA guys, but they're not telling us that they work for contractors. The whole thing is a sham.
And you didn't even get onto the print side.
What else did I miss?
You missed the print side.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, folks that are writing articles and in sending them to the CIA to be cleared before they're published in the LA Times, before they're published in the New York Times, before they're published on MSNBC.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. We talked about that earlier this week with Kerry Aku here on the show. And by the way, let me just, this is personal for me, so allow me to
It is your show?
No, I'm going to just vent for a little while. I'm a kid who grew up poor, worked hard, was able to go to school at the University of Minnesota, the Eric Severide School of Journalism. Mm-hmm. I worked hard to get that degree. I am a bona fide educated journalism with an education in journalism. I then went on to work for a small station. I've won awards. I've practiced journalism. I've practiced my craft. I've covered a gazillion stories. Why did I do that if you don't need that to work in this business anymore?
Well, as a compliment to what you're saying, I am not a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a political scientist with a couple of radio shows in a podcast.
Which is fine, but you don't call yourself a journalist.
No, because out of respect to people like you who studied the craft, who practiced the craft, who got a degree in the craft, I am always clear. Even though many people want to refer to me as a journalist, I am not, because I wasn't trained to be one.
But there's a place for what you do. These folks at NBC that are complaining now, most of them have people who work alongside them who they treat as if they're journalists. They do the big interviews. They cover all the stories. They've never been trained to do that. That's not their craft.
And look at...
They won't hire a guy like me.
And they won't hire a guy like me.
Right.
because there's a narrative. There is a very clear narrative that they want to sell to the American people. And they will not tolerate any... The name I was trying to think of on the Prince I was Ken Delanian at NBC.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Look it up, folks.
Well, and like him, there are so many others that basically go right from Raytheon to the set to explain a point of view where they're going to make money pushing a product. And that's just wrong as well. So, look, and I'm not saying that the media or everything that I do is correct or everything we do here is correct.
We make mistakes.
But, you know, you're going to call me that?
Right.
You're going to call me that when I know what you're doing with this? It just makes me, it frosts my behind, let's just say. Do we have time for Diddy? Can we do a little Diddy? I'll do a little Diddy. Diddy, do it. Sorry, couldn't excuse myself. Here's the pictures. Video everybody's been looking at now. These are police looking like they're raiding Diddy's homes in Florida and in Los Angeles. Apparently, they're investigating some kind of sex trafficking ring. This thing hit me out of left field. What do you make of this thing?
It hit me out of right field.
Yeah.
I have no clue what to make of this, but what I can say is it doesn't look good. It doesn't sound good.
Sounds like Epstein.
I hope it's not true.
Like famous people. I got famous friends, and they got a lot of money, and I know a lot of young girls, and I'm going to put the two together. Now, please, I'm not saying that happened. But
nor am I.
That's the way it seems to be represented or alleged. And if that's the case, that would be really sick.
And then we'll have to see what other names fall out as they shake the tree.
Or what other names won't fall out because they will be protected, as we know happened in the case that we previously
with Mr. Epstein.
Discussed. That's right. It's always such a pleasure having a conversation
with you. Thank you, Rick.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for stopping by. Before we go, I, as often do, remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. Kind of de-silo the world, right? Don't live in little tiny boxes where I have to think one way or the other, and I'm not allowed to think of what somebody else who disagrees with me might think. No, truths don't live in boxes, neither do we, and that's why we do this show. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again right here on Direct Impact.